nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Next up, we have Nancy Wilkins-Deer. Nancy is a co-PI of the NSF Exceed project, and she co-directs the Exceed Extended Collaborative Support Services, ECSS, program. She's the PI on a new conceptualization grant through NSF Scientific Software Innovations Institutes, the S2I2 program, to plan a Science Gateway Institute, and she'll lead the Science Gateway session that we have this afternoon. So welcome, Nancy.
Thank you very much, Michael. Thanks for the invitation to speak today. It's always hard to follow Gerhard and David, but I'm up to the task, I hope, this morning. So I'm going to give you a bit of a different perspective, kind of my interactions with Science Gateways. And so I've been involved in high-performance computing for a long time. I've been at the San Diego Supercomputer Center for about 20 years and working in industry prior to that, also in HPC. So I'm coming at it from a different way. And how I first got started in Science Gateways was back in the early 2000s. So in the TerraGrid project, Rick Stevens at the time was, you know, looking at this rapid development of web technologies and looking at the interfaces to supercomputers and thinking, you know, wouldn't these powerful systems have more of an impact if they were available through these web interfaces that we are seeing scientists design all over the place? So that was kind of the development of the gateway program, you know, all kinds of reasons for the takeoff of web technologies, the data deluge that David talked about, data from sensors and instruments and telescopes, as well as HPC machines. So, you know, you really need tools to be able to work with these things. So the world, you know, the world around us was changing quite a bit. This is when I got into supercomputing. This was about the state of things in the late 1980s. I had one level up. That's a VT100. I was on a VT220. So that's, you know, that's the interface. You know, visualization was also this green on black kind of plots and things like that. And then here is my login window on one of the more powerful supercomputers today. And so you see, okay, you know, 20 years, it hasn't changed a whole lot. So there was a lot of work to do. And, you know, there's, as Gerhard and David both pointed out, there's a lot of good reasons for these web interfaces. So the way we typically see scientists interacting with supercomputers is they write these little scripts that go and submit a job and it goes and runs. And maybe you use something like Lobis, which allows you to run on multiple different machines with the same interface. And maybe you use Condor to create some simple workflows and, you know, link things together. So do you really want each and every biologist to have to understand how to construct these scripts and run these things? Not very user-friendly at all, as Gerhard was pointing out. Goodness, this guy is ultra sensitive. So the Gateway program really allows, you know, and it takes, you know, there's a lot of boring work that sort of goes into these sorts of things. So there's policies that have to change. There's security issues, as you might imagine, accessing supercomputers. So it takes sort of a while to make this even a doable sort of thing. But today, you know, you can request supercomputer access for a single principal investigator, but also for gateways and large communities like this. So it's a very doable thing, and that took quite some doing. So we have... on Exceed today, there's a number of different gateway projects, and these aren't projects that we fund from the start up. These are projects that develop from NSF directorates, from NIH, but they all have the commonality that they use high-performance computing on the back end. And so what's kind of been interesting about this project is that we see so many different gateways and different types of gateways, and the gateway program actually served as a way for the developers of these different web interfaces to communicate with each other, both about the high-performance computing aspects, but also about just the general aspects of web development. And what we would see was a lot of commonality, whether you're doing climate modeling, whether you're doing GIS, whether you're doing social science data. There was a lot of commonality across all the different domains, and that's what made it kind of a fun and vibrant environment over the years. And I'll talk about where that's leading. So I'll give you just a couple of examples of the gateways using the Exceed systems today. So Cypress is one of our more heavily used gateways. It's nice because it's got the widespread. It's got usage throughout the world. It's being used by major R1 research institutions, publications in major journals. It's also being used in the classroom. And we also learned quite by accident recently that it was used by a 15-year-old to win his state science fair competition. And we found this out only because the principal investigator was, looking through logs, who's using a lot of time, what are you up to, and saw a K-12 email address. I'll show you a picture of our 15-year-old in a bit. But so this is the worldwide usage of Cypress. And so here is Armand's science fair poster, and he's citing the Cypress Science Gateway. And here he is in Lexington High School in Massachusetts. And here he is on the front page of the NSF website. So he became sort of quite a star without even realizing, probably not even realizing that he's using supercomputers. So when you talk about ways to excite the next generation to be able to get these results quickly and do a lot of these explorations, working with his teacher at school is really exciting for us to be able to discover those sorts of things. GIS is a nice example that I like for supercomputing because it has applications in so many different areas. So you might be using these really large LiDAR data sets and calculating view sheds to place your cell phone towers, also to look at how your watersheds develop. You also might be looking at the spread of disease. You might be looking at the development of language. So it's a really nice cross-disciplinary application, which makes it nice for gateways. And the increasing complexity of the GIS data sets makes it also nice for supercomputing. UltraScan is interesting because it connects an instrument behind a gateway. So there's an ultracentrifuge down in San Antonio, Texas, that spins these molecular samples. Looks like a bit of a washing machine here, but it spins these samples, and you can learn about their molecular structure based on how the materials settle out once they're spun. And so people from all over the world, some have their own ultracentrifuges and they use the gateway only for the analysis. Some send their samples to San Antonio and use both the machine and the analysis. So it's a nice example of instrument connectivity, very large user community. There's about 2,000 users. And it uses supercomputing in a number of different locations, so both here and in Europe. This is a gateway that I found in a toy catalog, and it just interested me. So this allows kids to control telescopes down in Chile. Not control them all the time, I'm sure, but it allows them to control them at some point and take images and discuss the results of those images with astronomers online. And so it's just a really nice example of the broad reach of gateways. So no supercomputing involved here, but a really nice project. So LEAD out of Indiana University, just up the road here. This one was a nice example of looking at the prediction of tornadoes. And so based on radar feeds, you might or might not want to do a high-performance computing simulation. So in order to really tell where a tornado cell is going to form, you need to do a really fine-grained simulation, computationally expensive, very small time scales. And you don't want to do that all the time. So when the radar indicates that conditions are favorable to tornado formation, then you might want to, quickly launch a high-performance computing job. So that's sort of the unique aspect of the LEAD gateway. And you see a bit of the workflow boxes here. I think this was Beeple that David also described. So I'm just giving you a few examples of really the diversity. So the social informatics data grid is also interesting because this one, it provides access to social scientists to these video collections. So you have these human subject interviews, and there's audio tracks, and you can tag gestures and things like that. And The social scientists use these for a number of different reasons. You might be looking at sort of conversational skills of Alzheimer's patients and how those start degrading. And so, and these data sets, as you might imagine, are very expensive to construct. So you have these special labs where you have the video equipment. A lot of times you also have heart rate and eye movement if you're, you know, looking at web pages, where's your eye going. So there's a number of reasons that you would use data from these labs. And if you can make this kind of expensive data available to a large number of people, that can be very powerful, because each and every social science department isn't going to have something quite like this. So streaming data that can get quite large, integrating multiple data sets, and, you know, it's also been nice in the classwork to be able to get these different communities to speak to one another in a language that they can all understand. That was something that was called out as a success of SIDGRID. And the supercomputing does some statistical analysis, also some video transcription, that sort of thing. The exciting thing to me about gateways is the high impact. For me, it's been the high impact of the supercomputers, but really just the high impact that you can have on science more generally. I mean, it's a fantastic time that we live in today, I have to say. So, working in this area over the years, though, we would see projects kind of come and go. And sometimes come and go for, you know, not entirely clear reasons besides the 3-year funding cycle was up. And so we started to think, you know, these things could have more of an impact if they were funded in a more sustainable way. So typically you develop a prototype, you get a few of your scientist friends to learn how to use something. They use it, you know, they learn how to use it. Oh, then the funding's over and, you know, the shop closes up and the scientists go away frustrated because they've sort of wasted their time. And the next time something like this comes along, they're going to be less likely to want to try again. So Catherine Lawrence, my collaborator at University of Michigan, we wanted to look at this a little bit and think about, you can't just, give lots of projects lots of money all the time. You know, that's one solution, but it's not very sustainable. So you want to look at what makes a gateway successful. What are those characteristics of success? What are sort of the larger environments that can make a project successful? So we took a couple of years to look at this, and I'm going to show you a short video clip of our findings. We talked to a number of folks over these 4 focus group meetings. David was at one of our sessions. George Adams represented NanoHub at one of our sessions. In choosing what groups to talk to see, who was successful or not, we read an awful lot of cyber infrastructure reports coming out of the NSF, you know, big stacks of these things. And you get sort of depressed at the end because there are a lot of very good reports with very good recommendations. And there's sort of a feeling that, well, are we just going to write one more report that's going to sit on the top of that stack and then get piled on by, you know, the next things? So we wanted to do something a little bit more memorable, which is why we made this this video. So I'm going to click over to this guy quick. Ooh, there we go. Sorry, it's loud. Thank you for indulging me. So I have just a few more slides, and I'm just about at the end of my time. But we hope that that type of summary and presentation would make the work a little bit more memorable, make it stick in folks' minds a little bit. It turns out, so that work was started a couple of years ago. It turns out it leads rather nicely into a new program that NSF is launching around software innovation and funding software at various different levels. And so, we thought really through our experiences that a Gateway Institute would be something very useful to the wider science community. So a way that you could pool resources, you could use developer time when you need it, you could transfer knowledge really across a lot of different disciplines. So that's what we're looking at. HubZero is one of our partners in that. We just got awarded for a conceptualization grant, and that means that we go out in the community for a year to talk to people like you about what would be useful in something like this. So we'll be talking a little bit about that in the afternoon session, as well as hearing some great presentations from Hub and Gateway developers. But it's really just kind of getting a sense from the community around the priorities for these different services, what's useful to you, what's not, and going from there. But it seems really nice timing to us. We think it would be a really terrific contribution to the science community. And these are some of the things that we're thinking about offering. I'll talk about this in a little bit more depth this afternoon. And, oh well. Let me put my last slide up there here. Yeah, so 1:30 this afternoon, 1:30 to 4 will be Hub presentations. Then we'll do some live polling. I'll ask you a few questions about the Institute. We'll have some discussions, challenges around building gateways, sustaining them, things like that. And then a couple more presentations, and we'll be done this afternoon. So thank you. That's a really good question. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, okay. So the question was, with all the GIS data out there, is there a future for a GIS librarian? I think so very much. I mean, there are some... there are some areas where it's almost like the Wild West these days. Biology is one, too, where you've got just explosive growth of code and not a lot of organization, a lot of people off sort of doing their own thing. I think GIS is similar, although, some of the sets, like LIDAR, are a little bit more carefully planned because there's so much that goes into generating them. So there's some that, the USGS... is already organizing some, but there's an awful lot of data that's just springing up as well, and looking at scales and interoperability is a big issue. I think there is. Yeah. Let's see. Hey, John.
Can you talk about the impact of licensing both for software and data on sustainability sites that maybe SIP do?
Sustainability is such a... It's such a big, hard question. I mean, really, it comes down to money for the most part. Either making something low cost enough so that it's sustainable, or having enough of a funding stream come in so that it's sustainable that way too. I think that's why we like this idea of the Gateway Institute, because it can provide kind of the expertise when you need it, but each and every project doesn't have to go off and hire and things like that. So it's sort of looking at sustainability that way. We haven't been looking at it from the licensing side much yet. We just really haven't, because in the web technologies, we run into that issue a lot less than some of the domain software codes, I think. So.
Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you, Nancy.